and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Print Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
What happens when you take a, you know, couple centuries old Visigoth warrior and then you launch him into space to fight aliens and then you bring him back into the 21st century? Better yet, what happens if you take Conan the Barbarian and have him make a child with Iron Man? I don't think that's possible, but somebody was able to do this in probably, perhaps, my single most favorite title of the past decade. Yes, folks, today we are talking about Valiant Entertainment's XO Manowar. It's been brought to me by fan demand and something that I saw in the stars as we were getting set up. We wanted to go ahead and get a great base of episodes set up so when we eventually introduced you to Arik the Visigoth, Arik of Dacia, the XO Manowar himself, you would know where to go. And we are starting hot and heavy, but we can't do that without the mischievous, marvelous, mighty masterminds that is the SPC's very own Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, how goes it?
Remzo, it's going fantastic. And just to get right into things, I learned so many things having you as my sidekick, or maybe I don't learn them, depending on your perspective. I've always pronounced it Arik of Dacia or Arik of Dacia, but I don't know that yours is the right or wrong way. Now that I think about it, I'm not sure if I've ever heard anyone say it out loud until right now. So I really have no idea how it's pronounced. I'm actually more confused than when I came in.
There are a lot of names like that. And of course, now because I'm searching for examples, I can't find it off the top of my head.
Yeah, like I need to go find the video where they...
Yeah, there was Amadeus Cho, and for years I called him Amadeus.
I don't know. Yeah, you are wrong. Very wrong.
Yeah, I screwed up on that.
See, old people like me have seen the movie Amadeus, so we know that it's Amadeus.
I wasn't allowed to watch that because that had hints of nudity. Yep,
hints.
I didn't see it until a few years ago.
I think it had more
ago.
Than hints.
Well, if you watch the director's cut, you see, full on Bush. But you know, what goes on TNT is not often what people want you to see.
Yeah, wait till the patrons see what happens on the director's cut of these podcasts.
Oh,
it gets a little scary stuff.
Yeah,
weird.
It gets
and wild.
A little horrifying.
Speaking of weird and wild, Remzo, you and I recently had a little guest appearance over on our friends at the Weird Science Podcast. We went on with
Jim. I can finally die happy.
Yes, exactly. We're going to cancel the show right now, actually. That was actually why I started this. I'm such a big fan of their show. I was like, I'll never get on that show unless I'm somehow involved in the comic community. So I was like, all right, let me trick Remzo into starting a show on the premise that I'm going to teach a young Latino boy to read via comics. And here we are. So welcome to the last edition of Weird Science. But no, it was great. You know, when Weird Science, a great podcast, by the way, if you guys are comic fans at all, they have several podcast feeds. They have the Weird Science DC Comics feed, the Weird Science Marvel Comics feed, and then their Patreon. If you think we put out a lot of content, and I think we do, I think we're doing pretty good. There will be more to come in 2021. But I mean, Jim over at Weird Science just puts out insane amounts of content on his Patreon. I'm a proud patron of that show as well. So definitely check out the Weird Science guys. They do great stuff. But when they have annuals week, they actually put their annuals show behind the paywall. And so they didn't have a regular show that week, so they actually took one of their paywalled shows, which is called First Best, and First Best Comic, I believe, and it's basically where they bring somebody on, and they look at either, you know, the first comic book they ever read, or their best comic they ever read. And for me, we chose to do my first comic I had ever read, which was Fantastic Four, number 357. I'm not even sure if I should spoil it, or should I let them go listen to the show, or read the issue?
Let's just say this. I don't know who was the Marvel editor at the time. It was maybe DeFalco or somebody. But Marvel does not think kindly of the blind.
No. Let's just say this. If you're married and your wife starts acting a little strange, starts making strange artwork that she didn't, you know, make before, just, you know, she may be an alien. That's all I'm saying.
If she wants to spend time with you and wants you to stop attempting to cheat on her,
she
might
compliments
be an alien.
You constantly, yeah. Anyway, check out the Weird Science podcast, Weird Science Comics podcast, where it's Weird Science DC Comics and Weird Science Marvel Comics. They are killing it. They have an awesome website too, by the way. If you are particularly in DC Comics, they do an insane. I think they literally review every single book, and they get advanced copies. So they're having those reviews. I think they drop, like, if you're up at midnight the day those issues come out, the reviews are there right away. And I've often used their reviews. They usually do them pretty spoiler free, so sometimes I'll use their reviews to decide which books to actually pick up, which books are actually worth it. So great resource, Weird Science. Check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since, you know, here at SPC, we look at a lot of stuff that is sometimes very recent, sometimes it's incredibly old. You know, we consider ourselves your kind of base to kind of launch from. Every once in a while, we'll do an episode like we did last week talking about the new Wonder Woman movie and what we're expecting in 2021. But if you want to hear that from us, usually it's in the Patreon. But if you want to know what's going on of each of these big publishers, issue by issue, week by week, Weird Science is definitely the king when it comes to that.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, speaking of Patreon, I gotta say, you know, 2021, we let you know that, you know, our plan is essentially global domination. I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And
to put it mildly.
To put it mildly. And, you know, that does include money. So what we try and do is we try and entice you, not just with all the awesome stuff that's behind the paywall, but we've been doing these giveaways. I think our first giveaway was last year. We were giving away copies of X-Men Issue 1 from 1992. And, you know, over the weekend, I was over at a place called Second and Charles over in Chantilly, Virginia. It's a great new store. It reminds me of something called Hastings, which we used to have in my old hometown, Sierra Vista. You know, board games, books, collectibles, all that stuff. It's really awesome. Well, anyway, one opened up here. My girlfriend and I went there, and they've just got this awesome section of back issues. They're all in very well, you know, great condition. It's like everything is like $2. You buy five, you get five free. I went freaking insane.
No, you can't resist that one. Remzo's not going to resist that.
I spent some money.
Spends like $8 on 70 different death metal one shots. So, I mean, 10 for 10 for you. I mean, I'm sure you were just salivating in there, just ravenous.
But you see, Mark, I was willing to spread the wealth because I was actually able to get my hands on a few copies of X-Force Issue 1 by Rob Liefeld, even with the original poly bag, the collector's edition with the trading cards and stuff that those came with. And I grabbed a couple issues there. I know that we've got a lot of Liefeld fans amongst our listeners. So I was like, hey, the next two patrons that join at $5 or higher, I will go ahead and mail you one of these copies. And within an hour, I wasn't even done posting it to all our different accounts and stuff, Mark. It was literally up. And within minutes, both of them were claimed. And I was like, holy shit, it works.
Yeah, literally it was like within seconds they were both claimed. And so we got two awesome new patrons out of that. One of them was Jim Werner, a friend from Weird Science Comics. So it all comes around.
Everyone loves Cable. Everyone loves Cable. But no, I mean, it's fantastic. And really, you know, this is a passion project. We try and do all the bonus content and all the perks and stuff to give you guys, you know, more fun throughout your week. But really, you know, at the end of the day, comics is a consumer hobby. It's a accumulation hobby. And when it comes to podcasts, it's really that kind of on steroids. So when you guys want extra bonus shows and more interactive stuff, all the awesome perks with Mark and I, we understand that you're taking a little bit of the hard-earned money that you used your time and energy to accumulate. And, you know, we just hope that we're continuing to give you great value and have a ton of fun in the process. So as always, we're going to keep these giveaways going. I'm having a good time going out and finding stuff. Mark is too. And we're going to try and find more ways, contests, raffles, all that stuff. So that way, you know, it'll not only entice you to get more involved with us, but you'll get something awesome as a result. And come on, it's X-Force Issue 1. We're going full 90s.
A win-win, Remzo. Every transaction in life, this is part of my philosophy, every transaction in life should be a win-win. That's what we're doing here. We're all winning. You're helping us, and we're helping you. We're giving you free stuff. And I mean, honestly, you read one of the you know, run of the letters last week from one of the fans. I mean, it really does strike me like really, really hard when I hear that, you know, we've been helping somebody through like mental issues, or, you know, we've been helping somebody with an escape. You know, it's really amazing to hear. So I mean, that's really what drives us. I mean, this is a fun podcast to do. I think even if we didn't put this out as a podcast, Renzo and I would have fun hopping on and talking about comics every week. But when I hear little stuff like that, when I see patrons reaching out to us and saying like, you guys are really making a difference in my life, I mean, that's not even the kind of message that I even thought I would get when we started this podcast. I was just thinking, yeah, it'd be fun to start a comic podcast. But hearing stuff like that is just, I mean, it just sends shivers up the spine. What can I say?
Exactly, Mark. And that's why here at SPC, we're reading comics and changing the world.
Boom.
Well, anyway, on to mighty things ahead. I don't think we've ever done a Valiant book. I think this might
we
be
have
our
not.
First one.
This is our Valiant debut. Should we talk a little bit about the genesis of Valiant Comics?
Absolutely. Mark, you were nothing but a wee lad back in the great golden gilded age known as the 1990s. We've got Image Comics, which we discussed the formation of Image Comics. We've talked about stuff like the Max in the past and others. I'm a big Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld fan like yourself. And Valiant was part of that. Valiant didn't get as much of the acclaim, but Valiant did make an impression. And, you know, they went through a period where they kind of disappeared and all this other stuff. But before I kind of get into the history of Valiant and before we get into the Valiant Entertainment, the current canon version of Exo Manowar Volume 1 by the Sword, did you collect any of these when you were a kid?
I mean, Valiant to me was this really intriguing company. They were actually founded in 1989 by Jim Shooter, who had worked for Marvel and DC over the years. He spun off and started Valiant. And just as he was getting that company going and was launching some new characters like Exo Manowar, like Ninjak, like Harbinger, just Lunch as this was happening.
Bitches.
Yeah. But Image swooped in and kind of stole a lot of the thunder. Not stole, I mean, you know, it's everyone's thunder to grab. But I feel like Image took a lot of the, you know, wind out of the sails of Valiant as kind of a third competitor, you know, sort of the third option to Marvel and DC. Image really quickly claimed that mantle. So Valiant was kind of, you know, in the background, but I was always intrigued by Valiant Comics. They had some really cool, I know Joe Quesada did a couple of their titles, and they had some awesome covers that they came out with that I actually went to conventions and got signed, like the Ninjak cover. I remember getting that one, Ninjak number one. I remember hunting down Exo Manowar number zero. That was just a huge issue. And they were really cool and different, and I just liked them because, again, much like with how I got into Savage Dragon, how I got into other books, even books that aren't that great like Thunderstrike, I got into books when I was young that I thought I could get in from the ground level. And that was another thing that was cool about the Valiant books. It wasn't just that you could get into these books at the ground level, you get into a whole universe at the ground level. And they really did make, unlike Image, which, you know, technically they sort of had a connected universe and they had characters appear in each other's books, that quickly kind of splintered away and was never really the focus of the books, the shared universe. But with Valiant Comics, the shared universe really is the focus. I mean, these characters cross over all the time in a logical way. I mean, there's actually editorial decisions behind these things and greater stories being built all the time. And it's just really nice to be able to kind of dive into a universe and sort of make it all your own and not have to really feel burdened, especially if you're a new fan, by the decades and decades and decades of history of Marvel and DC. So that's what always appealed to me about Valiant Comics. And yeah, I collected a bit of Ninjak, a bit of Exo Manowar, a bit of Harbinger, you know, in probably the early 90s.
Yeah, and for me, what really did it was, I think a few years back, well, probably more than a few years, probably 5-6 years back.
And Bloodshot. We can't forget Bloodshot.
Oh, Bloodshot. I've got the Vin Diesel figure over there. I've got the DVD. Bloodshot's my boy. But for me, with Valiant, what brought me in was, I'm a big fan of CW's Arrow. I loved that series. The guy who played Deadshot in Arrow, I remember going online, seeing something, I think through Sci-Fi Channel, what Valiant wanted to do to try and let people know that they existed when they came back as Valiant Entertainment. They've always been pushing to want to do more in video games and film. We haven't seen much in video games recently, and the one film that came out has been Bloodshot, but, you know, not a lot of people saw it because as soon as it hit theaters, you know, the pandemic happened and no one wanted to pay full price, like $20, to see that movie unless you were going to buy it on a DVD. And now, you know, it's on Hulu and stuff. More people, I feel like Bloodshot has started to pick up a little bit, so more people recently are watching it. But for me, I was watching a Sci-Fi Behind the Scenes, and Valiant put together a limited web series called Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. And I saw the guy from Arrow who played Deadshot, he was playing Ninjak. The dude who was like the original Red Ranger from Power Rangers was Bloodshot. They were actually going all out with the action. It's actually a pretty well-produced, low-budget superhero film. And in that film, you basically see Ninjak. He's forced by a villain to go steal the Book of the Dead. And basically, everyone is trying to figure out why he's doing it. Ninjak can't tell anyone, or else his friends, family, who've been taken hostage by this villain, they're going to die. So it's basically Ninjak trying to figure out, how do I save everybody? Well, not giving this villain this book, which can ultimately bring about evil forces to conquer the world. So it's an awesome series. A lot of you had problems finding it. So what I did was I posted just the embedded video over on the website, secondbrickcomics.com. I'll post a link to that in the show notes so you can watch all of Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe for free. But that's what did it for me. And to kind of jump into the history, this is just from Wikipedia, folks. I'm going to go ahead and pull it out. Valiant has gone through different iterations. Right now, what we'll be reading is from Valiant Entertainment, which is currently out. It's the current version of the company, but it started as Valiant Comics. Valiant Comics was an American publisher of comics and related media. The company was founded in 1989 by former Marvel Comics editor-in-chief Jim Shooter, who was personally my all-time favorite Marvel editor. I mean, he brought out some of the best X-Men series, Avengers, Secret Wars was his thing, so you have a lot to thank Jim Shooter for, along with lawyer and businessman Stephen Marsosky. In 1994, the company was sold to Acclaim Entertainment. Now, when it was sold to Acclaim, Acclaim was known for putting out a lot of WWE, World Wrestling Federation games on like Atari and stuff like that. So what they wanted to do was take a lot of these Valiant characters and properties and turn them into video games, which they did. There was a Shadow Man video game and a couple others, but that was really the intent. The intent was not really to do much with the comics. But anyway, they did bring back the comics. They rebooted them. They had new, you know, all the characters are basically the same characters, but in name only. They all had different origins and everything, a giant change. And some of the others also got sold off. A few of the characters went over to Dark Horse, Dynamite, that type of stuff. But after Acclaim declared bankruptcy in 2004, the company was restarted as part of Valiant Entertainment by entrepreneurs Dinesh Shamdasani and Jason Kathori in 2005. And Mark, I might be mistaken, but I think these guys were like in college when they
were pretty young, because I've heard interviews with them and they're not that old now. So they must have been pretty young in 2005.
I mean, really, really smart guys. They brought back this amazing universe basically from the dead. But anyway, Valiant launched its publishing division in 2012 as part of an initiative called the Summer of Valiant, which I remember going on when I was in high school at the time. It won Publisher of the Year and being nominated for Book of the Year at the Diamond Gem Awards. Since then, Valiant has set sales records and was the most nominated publisher in comics in 2014, 2015. And 2016 for the Harvey Awards, releasing the biggest selling independent crossover event of the decade with Book of Death in 2015. After that, Valiant was acquired by DMG Entertainment in 2018. And you know, going back then, this is a kind of a dated wiki entry, but 2015, Valiant announced they had partnered with Sony Pictures to produce 5 films based on the Bloodshot and Harbinger comics. The rights for Harbinger would later be acquired from Sony by Paramount Pictures. And you know, so far what we've had is we've had Bloodshot at Sony, Bloodshot got greenlit for a sequel, and Paramount not only has Harbinger, but apparently they also have Exo Manowar. So we're seeing already right at the beginning a bit of this fracture of the potential cinematic universe. But I gotta say, I'm a Fast and Furious fan. I like Riddick. I think Bloodshot is probably Vin Diesel's best movie, or at least my favorite
best movie
Vin Diesel.
Period?
For Vin Diesel? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Not the best movie he's in, but his best performance?
His best performance.
Okay. Better than Groot? Or are we not counting? We're not counting Groot.
No. That bothers the hell out of me. I mean, they are basically just buying access to his Twitter following.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I've always thought to myself, like, what, like, that could be anybody. That could be a computer-generated voice. They just want to say Vin Diesel is in these movies.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the most popular actors on Earth. And love him or hate him, I mean, the guy has a massive global following. That's why
he's full on love. I have no hate to the D's.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I respect the hustle.
For sure.
But basically, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Valiant has gone through all these different stages. I started collecting Exo Manowar first, and then I jumped on to Bloodshot, Harbinger, The Eternal Warrior, and Unity in probably beginning of 2020, I want to say. Yeah, like just around January 2020, mainly just because I was just getting kind of bored You know, I've basically stopped collecting Marvel, and I was still collecting my DC books, but a lot of it was just a little bit predictable. You know, with Valiant, what really struck me were two things. One, they're just...
Was that the first time you'd read Valiant Comics this year? Or this past year? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, what really got me was the fact that, one, their characters are just so different. It does not look like your typical superhero publisher. And secondly, their biggest thing is for their stories, they want to look like the world outside your window. So, of course, we're dealing with supernatural stuff, alien stuff like that. But what they really try and do is take a more grounded approach to their stories. And with that, you get a lot of really original storytelling. I mean, when I say original, I mean very original stories. You know, of course, you've got Ninjak, which is kind of like James Bond meets Batman. You've got Harbinger, which is kind of like an X-Men homage. But when it comes to just the stories, the plots themselves, like I have been binging so much of Valiant Entertainment stuff. Just, I mean, it's if they were films, they'd be Oscar worthy.
Sure. I mean, every product is derivative of something in some way. So, of course, a lot of the characters have elements of that you can see in other characters from Marvel and DC, but they really are unique characters in and of themselves, unique stories in and of themselves. And I think Valiant's a great company to jump into if you just want to kind of try have something you feel like is yours. Like, again, that's what I love about Valiant so much is that it's really a very small interconnected universe. You could pretty easily collect like all the Valiant titles if you just wanted to do that and nothing else, and you would be reading, you know, a cohesive universe. You would really feel a part of that specific universe. So, I mean, I think for comic fans that kind of don't know where to start, sometimes we get that question a lot, actually, because a lot of people that listen to the show weren't necessarily huge comic fans before, or they're lapsed fans. They don't know where to get where to jump in when they kind of get back into comics. And like myself, I was a lapsed fan for a while, and Valiant was there both times for me. Valiant was there when I first started reading comics, and then it was there again with the relaunch in 2012, which is right around when I started reading comics again after being lapsed for a while. So both times for me, Valiant has served as an entry point, as something I could just dig my teeth into. And it just so happened that they were literally launching a full line, you know, right around the time I became a fan and then became a fan again, or refound my fanhood, however you want to say it. So I would highly recommend checking out a couple of Valiant books if you are one of those fans that's just kind of not sure where to go yet, is a little too intimidated to say jump into like Jonathan Hickman's X-Men or anything like that. I think it's definitely something to check out, and maybe perhaps Exo will be one of those characters.
Absolutely. I would say that Exo Manowar is really Valiant Superman. So Superman is to DC, Spider-Man is to Marvel. This was not only their biggest, most popular character, I think second is followed by Bloodshot, but this was the first title to get relaunched. This is the title that introduced a lot of the other characters that would get their own books eventually. For me, as soon as I read this volume, it not only got me just really obsessed with the character, but then I started getting everything. I mean, when the pandemic started, my comic book shop down the road was doing a buy one, get one 50% off sale. I walked out with basically
There it is again, those sales. Yep, those sales. You know, Remso's going to go nuts in there.
I basically walked out with like all the Valiant trade backs I could get. So anyway, let's go ahead and jump in.
Let's do it.
We are looking at Exo Manowar Volume 1, By the Sword. Right now, we are in...
And this is from 2012, just for people that might be looking this stuff up, because there's Exo Manowar Volume 1 from 1993, I believe. There's also Exo Man, yes. Exo Manowar. I'm not sure if they're calling it... I think it is Volume 1 again, from 2017. So you can find... The funny thing is, when I first started researching this book, and I'd read all these over the years...
This is funny.
Yeah, I accidentally started reading Exo Manowar Volume 1 from 2017. And I was like, Remso, are you sure this is the right? Because Remso had... You know, we have a little document, and it says how many issues there are in each run. And I got to issue 4. I was like, I don't know, man. This really seems like a 6-issue arc. I don't think this ends here at issue 4. But he's like, no. The trade just has the first 4 issues. I'm like, I don't know. But then I realized, oh my God, I'm reading the 2017, not the 2012. So be careful out there, kids.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and include links if you want to grab these. You know, when we don't usually do it, but when we include links to comics, and I think, you know, it's also on Hoopla. Is this on Hoopla?
It is, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm reading the trade back. Mark is looking this on Hoopla. I'll throw like an Amazon link so at least you can get the reference. But like, we don't make money from that. It's just so that way you could do it, because I know a lot of you. I love it when you send us photos of you actually ordering comics that we talked on the show. It's a lot of fun. So I'll do that to help point you in the right direction.
since we don't take money from these things, I'm just going to recommend, you know, we don't have an Amazon affiliate program for the podcast. We haven't set anything like that up. I don't even know if we care to. But what you should if you're going to click through Amazon, go to Amazon Smile, sign up for any charity of your choice. I don't even care what you do. But it's really awesome because it'll donate, I think, 5% of your sales from your items to to a charity of your choice. So at least do that if you want to go through Amazon.
So that way you can be somebody's hero.
Exactly. And then you really can read comics and change the world. Boom.
Booyah. So we're in the year 402 AD. Right now, what you have is the Visigoth, the barbarians, fighting the Roman Empire. And what you see in the first couple issues is you see a couple of Visigoth warriors. They're just really worried about whether or not this recent treaty with the Romans has actually gone through or not. But they're worried because the relations between the Visigoths and the Romans are not that great. So any potential peace is not looking very good. That's why in the next page, when we scroll over, we go ahead and we're taken to Palentia, northern Italy in 402. And basically what you can see is, as they have arrived, they could basically tell this treaty with the Visigoths and the Romans hasn't really worked out. And you've got this giant legion of soldiers that are now just like throwing spears at each other in like a giant, like, you know, Lord of the Rings style fight. It's on. And at this point, as the Visigoths are looking at the Romans, they're like, holy crap, man, they brought all of the Western Empire. So things are looking kind of hairy for the Visigoths, who don't have the best weapons, don't have the best armor. They're barbarians. They don't have much training. And, at this point, when you go to the third page, they're just getting slaughtered right now. I mean, you could see them. They're being told, you know, Visigoths, form your lines. But you see quite a few people up front. Their shields are shattering. This is not going in their favor at all. It just started.
And it feels like it feels like you just jumped in to the pivotal battle scene of a movie or like the Battle of the Bastards for Game of Thrones. Annie. I mean, it feels like a huge epic battle that you're just shoved into. But this is not the pivotal scene of the film. This is just the setup. This is just getting us into things. So it really does give a sense of the grandiosity of the wars that have been going on here between the Visigoths and the Romans. And they're definitely outnumbered, those Goths.
I mean, things get worse for them because then you go down a few panels and they've got catapults throwing out like fire bombs or something. And you actually see them, they start hitting, Visigoth soldiers. And one guy, he just explodes. I mean, obviously these aren't like bomb bombs, but like when he has a sound effect, which is like, it's not going well. And you can't really see the faces of the soldiers as they're around them. But the way I see it, it's kind of like they're just staring like, oh, shit.
Yeah. They're not having a good time.
Yeah. At this point, General Stilicho, he's the Roman general. He's just laying waste to the Visigoths. As soon as the lines start to falter, King Alaric, Arc of Dacia's father, jumps in, and one of his generals runs over to him, and he's like, King Alaric, the Roman artillery is too much. Our lines are faltering. And the king goes, curse General Stilicho. The coward fires from his barbs from afar, afraid to meet us on the open field. We must save our strength for a battle of our own design. Signal the retreat. And, at this point, everyone is trying to fall back. And this is where Arc of Dacia, King Alaric's son, comes in. And he's like, what do you mean? We can fight retreating. We don't retreat. We're Visigoths. So at this point, this King Alaric is his uncle. Arik's father died. So I just made a mistake right there. So King Alaric is Arik's uncle. At this point, Arik is like, no, we can go back and fight. You've got another saying, Arik, do as your uncle says. The battle is lost. And Arik says, no, victory can still be ours, Gofty. We must charge. Put the enemy on the defense. And at this point, you know, some of the soldiers are going with him and some others are going back with the king. It's not looking very great. So Arik comes over and he's like, hold your ground, Visigoths, show the Romans what we're made of. And they're all looking at him and he's like, what are you talking about, man? What are we made of? It's all over the ground. Would you have us stand there like sheep while their artillery smashes us to pieces? And at this point, you know, he gives basically your generic warrior speech. And while half the Visigoths are going back with the king, the other half are like, fine. you know, we'll go with you. And this is funny. One of the other soldiers who knows Ark pretty well, he's like, you may have, you have my fine looks, boy, but you have your mother's temper. And, you know,
Ark is basically William Wallace here.
Basically. And as he's storming, I mean, it's really hard for artists to do a lot of it. Wait a second. So that's his father, right? That's not the king who said, you have my fine looks.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's what, okay. Yeah, exactly.
So the king is Alaric and his father is the other officer.
Is just his father. Yeah.
Got it. It's a little confusing there.
I think his father is one of the generals or some such.
So anyway, as I was mentioning, yeah, it's often really hard for artists to do a lot of these battle scenes, especially in small panels. Usually they do full page spreads like what we saw earlier. But I mean, this artwork by Kerry Nord is just absolutely fantastic. You see Arik, they start charging the Romans. At this point, they're just stabbing them in the guts, slitting throats, cutting off heads. It's quite a spectacle. But right now, even though the Visigoths have this one moment of courage, it's just not looking well for them. At this point, King Alaric comes over and he's like, fall back to the wagons. The lives of our family depend on it. Because as only half the army returns, the other Romans were like, oh, they've basically split. So why not just go for the entire tribe? And, you know, Arik is still out there killing. But at this point, things just aren't going for him. In fact, things get even worse. You see Arik literally cut someone's head off. But as soon as that happens, his father gets impaled by a Roman spear. And he's just looking and he's like, oh, shit, what did I do?
Yeah, it was actually the guy that speared his father. That's who his head chops off. Yeah, you can tell there. Because he's holding Arik's father like by the neck.
Oh yeah, you see it right there. He's in kind of like the corner. Okay, I'm too busy distracted by the decapitating going.
There's a lot going on here. I mean, there's a lot of decapitating. Yeah,
but he goes ahead and just straight up decapitates that guy. He throws his father on his horse, and you've got Romans taunting him. They're like, "Face this coward!" You've got two panels of Arik looking back, and you know you could tell he wants to fight. He wants to go prove his Visigoth barbarian manhood, but it's just not happening. He is basically wanting to save his father, and he knows he has to go back and save the families. So I feel like he
would have fought to the end if it not for having to save his father there. So because he just gave no fucks. Arik is there to fight. He's not there to strategize. He's not there to regroup. He's there to fight. He is a warrior. They make that very clear. But then, of course, he does love his father and does want to save his father. So I think that's what the only thing that could have drawn him out of battle.
Yeah, this very much reminds me of the scene in the first Thor film where the Frost Giants are trying to get access to Odin's treasure room, and Odin doesn't want to retaliate after killing the ones that tried to get in. So what Thor does is he takes the Warriors Three and Lady Sif and Loki, and they attempt to go basically kill Laufey, the ice giant. The Frost Giant King. So it kind of reminds me of that, because what ends up happening for Thor, things don't go very well. He's scolded by Odin, and you know, the rest is history. Here, something similar kind of happens. We're back at the Visigoth camp somewhere in northern Italy after the retreat. And Arik's father is dying at this point. And you know, at one point he's like, leave me to die, boy. Go be with your wife while you still can. And Arik, you know, apparently when he got back, some of the Romans had actually kidnapped some people. So, you know, while he was fighting, the Romans were ransacking. Ironic, because usually it's the barbarians doing that. So Arik is like, hey, Deidre was taken too, but we will ride after them if need be and cut down any Roman who stands in our path. Your sword, I brought it from the battlefield. You will swing it again. And his father pushes the sword away. I mean, you could tell this guy is in serious pain. You see blood all over him still as they tried to clean him up even. And he's like, you should have left it. It isn't worth the strength it took to carry it. And he's like, hey, I watch you forge this sword yourself. It is the envy of the entire army. It's a pretty cool looking sword. But this is where he really needs to start listening to his father, because as his father's, you know, his voice is obviously fading. They do a pretty good job showing this with the shrunken,
the wobbly shrunken lettering.
Yeah. For the dialogue in that speech bubble, he says, then the army is made of fools. Swords did not stop the Huns from driving us out of our lands in Dacia. they will not help us gain a new land of our own. The Romans have the Basilisk and the Onagers, cities with high walls, and we have blades and open fields. It is not enough.
I'm not sure how to say that word, Onagers, who knows?
Yeah, it's
but it makes it feel like these guys did their research.
If you're prepping for the SAT, children, this might help you out. Yeah. Arik is still trying to convince his father, come on, you got to get up and do this. And his father, with his last word, says, it was never enough. And he passes. At this point, Arik is like, your sword will prove its worth, father, I swear. So what does Arik do? The one thing nobody freaking wanted him to do. He goes and grabs a whole bunch of other Visigoths, and he's like, hey, let's go ahead and see if Stilicho's dogs have come to pick over our bones. We will make them choke on them. And at this point, I mean, it's basically assumed that Arik is hot-tempered and does not have the best judgment.
Perhaps not, but, you know, that's kind of part of his charm, too. That's what makes him the warrior that he is. I don't think any of this story works as we go through that. If he is one of these calm people that just says, I'm just going to sit here and plan and wait for the right time and figure things out. No, he's a man of action. That is really part of the character, as we'll see going forward.
And I got to say...
I'm going to contradict that actually in an issue or two, because actually they do. Well, I'll bring the subject back up later.
I will say this. We already know more about Arik of Dacia in these four pages than we ever have of Riri Williams Ironheart.
That is accurate. I think that's accurate.
Very accurate. Yeah. And here is where things start getting a little bit saucy.
Yeah, but the blood feud you have with Riri is just... it's something to watch, let me say.
Never Ironheart. Hashtag never Ironheart. this is where things getting kind of saucy and scary, folks. They go off back to the field where they were fighting, and what they see is this giant mechanical structure that turns out to be an alien spaceship. And you see these guys wearing armor and capes. So, you know, the initial reaction is, oh, there's a spaceship, but are those Romans? And this is where one of the Visigoths goes over to Arik, and he's like, even if that is where the Romans hold our families, we should send word for reinforcements, because they look at that thing and they're like, yeah, this is probably not the time to go do something brave.
They got this new badass armor with these fancy purple capes and this weird... I'm sure they didn't think ship, because they don't even know what a ship would be in the sense of this thing. They think it's just like a cell or somewhere where they're holding people.
Yeah, and at this point, I mean, all Arik has to say is Deidre. He's still thinking of his wife who's been kidnapped by these Romans. And that's when one of the other lieutenants, he's like, Gofti is right. There's no telling how many legionnaires hide inside that behemoth. We should exercise caution. And just like every time Arik is told, we should hold back. We should exercise caution. What happens? Someone throws a freaking spear at one of the strange caped men. And Arik jumps up and he screams, give them no quarter, swords ablazing. And this is where things start to really change. Those aren't Romans, because Romans don't have freaking fire guns.
Yeah, Romans do not have flame-throwing laser guns.
I gotta say, Mark, usually when people are dealing with like aliens and, you know, whether different comics or TV shows, usually the weapons are pretty generic. It's usually like the straight laser beam. These are like freaking flamethrowers. They are the most badass alien rifles I've ever seen.
I want one. Elon Musk, get on it. I mean, he basically did, actually, already. But
We need flamethrowers for everybody to combat the alien menace. Indeed. But, you know, we're not dealing with the alien menace. And Arik figures this out after he stabs one of them, and he calls him Roman scum. But, you know, as he looks around, they're like, huh, this is kind of strange. What manner of legionnaires dress and carry such weapons? And that's when one of the soldiers goes over to the alien that Arik just killed, and he takes off his helmet, and it's like this scary freaking predator roach person.
I just wanted one of them to say, that is one ugly son of a bitch.
This is where it gets, I love the dialogue in these books. It's written by Robert Venditti. He will write this entire run of Exo before Matt Kind takes it over for the second series.
See, and that's another one. You say Kind, I say Kint. I'm pretty sure it's Kint.
Let's say kind. Kind sounds better than kind.
It does. It really does.
I feel like that's an insult.
I think the T on the end changes how you say the I. I don't know.
Thank you for teaching me to read, Mark.
I haven't talked about this on the show, but you're welcome. This actually is where I teach you. No, it was a joke. This actually is the show where I teach a young Latino boy how to read. This is funny. I was actually a champion of the spelling bee in fifth grade, Meeting House Hill School, New Fairfield, Connecticut. Yes, and I flamed out quickly. The next year, this is unbelievable. I win 1 year. The next year, I don't even qualify for the thing. I don't know what happened. I just fell off. So I'm on the downward slope still since then on my spelling skills. So maybe I'm not the number one best teacher, but I do have a history. I do have a track record. You just got to look far back.
It mattered at some point. Just as things matter here, Arik looks down at the roach alien person and he says, Stilicho has no criteria when hiring for his federati. So the federati are basically mercenary, you know, people taken from other lands, you know, typically not Roman citizens, who were conscripted into the Roman army. And this is around the time for the Romans where they're, you know, they're spending out of control. They're everywhere. They're outnumbered everywhere they go. They can't handle people. So they're just taking anyone and everyone they could possibly get. And R continues, he will conscript all manner of man and apparently beast to do his fighting for him. And what I think is kind of funny about that is Arik is so full of himself. He's almost not surprised. He's just so matter of fact about it. And my only question is, like, how many other alien beast monster people do you see fighting with the Romans?
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe your first instinct isn't aliens, because maybe you're not even someone who thinks of space or planets or what have you. So the only thing you can think is, man, he found some ugly son of a bitch to fight in their army, or they found these weird beast things. But yeah, he doesn't seem that as shocked as one might think someone would be seeing a creature like this. He just kind of goes, well, all right, that's weird. And then moves on to go fight. Well, you'll get to it. This robot creature.
Yeah, and I mean, I love this part, because Arik turns over as the door of the spaceship is opening, and he sees not only more of those creepy roach alien caped monsters come out, but he sees this giant robot that looks like the one that Ripley comes out in the first Alien film. And the soldier he was with is like, yeah, you were saying it's funny, catchy dialogue. And I just love that, because they look over and immediately they're like, oh shit. Back at the Visigoth camp, though, you see that some of those masked alien creatures have gotten into the camp, and you could tell these guys are really trying to hide. They're not there to attack. What I think is funny is when they're talking to each other, it just shows chirp. Mm-hmm. So chirp, chirp. It's just, chirp, I guess that's chirp, how they talk. Chirp. What happens is they go into the one of the tents and they see this baby. And what they do is they take the baby, they pull off some of its hair, and they put it inside this like syringe type of thing. And what they do is they take that shot, that syringe, and what you see is they pull out an alien baby. They stab the alien baby with the syringe that has the hair of the human baby, and it literally transforms into a human baby. Then from there, they like steal or kill the human baby, and for all we know, the alien baby is exactly like the human baby, so much so that the mother comes in because she hears the baby crying, and she picks him up as he's fully transformed, and, you know, He's basically human now. So we see that, and we're just like, what the hell has just happened?
Yeah, I didn't read all of Venditti's run. I did read a good amount of it. I did read, I think I read up to like 20 or so issues of this run. I don't know if he ever did anything with this, but I just thought of it now. Like, I wonder what happened to that baby. Like, maybe they just killed it, like you said, but they don't show it getting killed. Like, that. I wonder if that's anything. I don't know if that's a character that could come back, or if I was writing this book, I might look at this issue and go, oh, maybe I should do something with this baby they took and never explain what happened to. But, you know.
I almost think it's more sinister, because you're going to have that in the back of your mind as we keep going further. Like, what happened to the human baby?
Yeah, I think I'm never going to stop thinking about it.
Much like other scenes where it's like something can take a very, very, very dark and heinous turn, sometimes it's better left unsaid to let the reader develop that suspense.
No matter what, I think it's safe to say nothing good happened to that baby.
No, nothing good happened.
Maybe a dingo nothing took that baby. Maybe a creepy alien took the baby. Anyway, the baby's gone.
Either way, the baby's gone, replaced with the alien baby, who looks like a human baby. We're back to the battlefield.
I love this too, because this will come back by the end of this show. But it's just this one page, and you kind of forget about it for a while, and then when it comes back, you kind of have a moment where you think, oh, so stay tuned.
Yeah, so we're back to the battlefield, and you see them fighting these aliens in the giant fighting robot mech suit. And Arik tries to do like this awesome leap attack with his sword. And as soon as his sword, his father's sword of all things, hits the mech armor of this, you know, of this battle suit, it shatters. And he looks down at his father's sword, and he's like, oh, no. And then the mech suit just backhands him. He flies, and he's just down. But like a good warrior, as soon as one of the alien creatures is coming around, they have basically destroyed all of Arik's forces, that we can assume.
Yeah, they killed most everybody and captured Arik and a couple of his buddies, basically. But almost everybody was just slaughtered, especially once that mech tech whatever creature came out. That thing was just blasting everybody. Like, it showed them just blasting that fire right into their face and just disintegrating. So once that thing came out, they were pretty much done. And depending on how you see the rest of the story, they're lucky to be alive. Or maybe they're not. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with, like, Punisher levels of violent here, but what we've seen from these aliens is that they didn't just show up one day. They're here with a purpose, so much so that the battle is over. We don't know who's alive and who's dead. We just see that Arik is basically knocked out, and you see those aliens that were trying to go into the village and replace the human baby with the alien baby. They come back and they say to the giant mech suit guy, "The plantlings were successful, Commander Trill." Remember that name.
Yeah, and they're showing us, you know, with those little carrots on the end, so we know they're just translating for us. But in reality, us humans would just be hearing that little chirp, chirp, chirp.
Chirp, chirp.
But they're saying stuff. They're saying real stuff.
Commander Trill, who is in that giant mech suit, apparently, he says, "Excellent. The others have already returned. Load the survivors for transport." So what we do know from that is that they're obviously not all dead, just some of them are dead, that they have some plans for them. So much so that as soon as they load up the survivors, Trill says, "We will depart at once." And then you see some of the surviving Visigoths who have been knocked out or whatever. They're all dragged onto the ship, and the ship just flies off. And as it flies out of our atmosphere, we see that it's not just one, but it's part of a giant armada. And this is where we begin to learn who we're dealing with. We're dealing with the Vine. And we see this in a little caption off the side. They're basically told they're in deep space, away from any other planet, uninhabited or inhabited. And they're in a Vine colony ship. At this point, this is where we really begin to see these aren't just random, you know, take me to your leader aliens. They've got a plan. And this is funny because it is like, you know, oh, the tables have turned type of situation. The ship lands inside the giant colony ship. And as the Visigoth warriors are basically handcuffed and taken out, you see one of the Vine soldiers basically saying, "Get in line, animals." And the Visigoths are just looking around. They're like, "What the hell is this?" Mark, as we... you know, as we saw these guys first just trying to hide and then replacing the baby, coming out with these giant mech suits, and now they're basically taking people prisoner. What was your impression of the Vine thus far?
Well, like you said, these are not just, you know, take me to your leader, mindless invasion aliens. These are not just, you know, explorers. They came to Earth. And from what we can tell, we have no idea how long they've been coming to Earth, because they clearly had this thing where they could, you know, take something out of a human baby, put it into another thing, and make their little baby a human looking baby. So, for all we know, this could be the first time they've done this. This could be the millionth time they've done this. Maybe they've been coming and visiting Earth and doing this forever. So we really don't know. But we've seen enough intelligence and advanced technology from these guys to know that they are way above and beyond anything that the Visigoths could ever imagine in terms of technology or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think that a rational person would be a little bit, you know, like, hey, I this is a bit out of my league. No. Arik is walking, and next thing you know, Arik starts coughing, and it looks like he's keeling over. So much so that another Visigoth tries to help him up. And what's crazy about these handcuffs that they're on is that they're like very splintery, thorny vines. A Vine soldier comes over, and he's like, "No falling behind." But what does Arik do? He basically flips around, is able to wrap his his handcuffed vine thing around the vine soldier's neck, and he chokes him to death. I mean, with the green blood and everything else, he's just like, I don't give a shit who you are. You are going down.
And he's not going to wait to find out. Again, Eric is just a one to Eric, however you want to say it. He is a man of action, and he sees a moment to act. He looks at this thing on his wrist and says, oh, this is not just a handcuff. This is a weapon, and he uses it as such immediately. I mean, he's badass. What can you say?
You see, a lot of leaders these days, they like to think that they're all brains and heart, and Ark is just basically all gut and balls. He's an admirable guy.
Indeed, yes. Gut and balls, I like it.
Gut and balls. So basically, Arik, he frees the other Visigoth who's with him, and he's like, quickly, before they realize we're gone, they start running through the ship as if they know where they're going. And they quickly
yeah he's like come on we gotta hallway. Go it's like where are you gonna go, you have no idea, but he seems to know.
Was always this doesn't bother me too much, but that's what always bothered me, like, about Star Wars, because it's like, oh, they must know every in and out of this Imperial ship and everything, and they're doing their typical thing. It's like, you know, stormtroopers come through, they just dive in at in a side hallway. That's kind of like what they do here, is they're running from the vine. At this point, you know, I think he's starting to realize this is kind of a bit out of my league. The enemy, I was wrong. These are not Roman Federati. They are something else. We will not find our families here, Gofty. We are here to free the others. And then we must first free ourselves. And at this point, they're looking around, and they're in this other room. They're on, like, the balcony of this room, and they look down, and this is where things for them start getting really trippy. all the guys that you saw earlier, like, switching babies and stuff back in the village, they're all here, and it looks like they're in this weird religious ceremony. What I think is cool about the artwork is it's really hard to make aliens look that unique.
I want this to be a movie so bad. I mean, I really do. Yeah. Who would play Arik? I'm going to start saying it your way, I decided. I like it better.
Chris Hemsworth. I would want Chris Hemsworth to do this.
Can't argue with that. It's a little too much like this is just Thor again, but I think if it's done well enough, you'll quickly see the uniqueness, and he can definitely pull it off.
Absolutely. Or maybe his brother Liam Hemsworth. I mean,
That's what we agree on. He's got to be. We need a Hemsworth, anybody. Find me a Hemsworth.
When I think of who would play him, I think of Chris Hemsworth or even Taylor Kitsch, who hasn't been in a movie for a while. I actually liked John Carter, you know, Warlord of Mars. Yeah.
Okay.
I actually think that Taylor Kitsch, who played John Carter, could really do this. This is kind of a John Carter story. Kinda. But anyway, they look down, and they, you know, what I love about the scene is you see all the foliage. It's like nature mixed with technology. It's really creepy. These are very original aliens. I'll give the creators credit for this. But you see this giant priest in red robes. He's over at this tree stump, which is the altar in the middle of this room. It's got this giant blue ball there, and he's like, "Blessed armor of Shanhara, we ask that you reward us for our faith, that we ask you open yourself to us on this day." And then they basically bring in this other guy. He's coming in. He looks like he's about to take part in the ceremony. And he's like, "Commander Pith, for your prowess in battle, you have been chosen for this highest honor. May Shanhara deem you worthy." And he's this big vine soldier. He's a big motherfucker. And what happens is, the blue ball, which turns out to be Shanhara, it starts floating, and, you know, pieces of it start coming off, and we see that it's basically armor. So the armor goes around Commander Pith, and Gafty is like, "The metal, it moves on its own. Have you heard of such a thing?" And Arik is like, "Not even in the myths." I love that part.
No, I have not heard of such a thing anywhere. Because I guess at least from the Visigoth perspective, they had heard myths about certain creatures. And maybe Arik could write off, "Oh, here's a mythical creature." But now, no.
Like, here's a minotaur or something.
Yeah,
like
maybe
that.
Here's a
dragon or a hydra.
Yeah, maybe he could at least handle that. But this is above and beyond anything.
Yeah, the roach people are officially creeping them out, especially when they've got giant floating armor balls.
Yeah.
And, as Commander Pith finally puts on the helmet, all the other, we'll call them priests, all the priests there, they're bowing to him. And Gofty is like, "Is that their king?" And Arik goes, "Is it the creature they bow to or the armor?" That's very important.
I think
really
he answered his own question there.
Yeah. And at this point, somebody grabs a rifle and hits Gofty in the back of the head. Arik comes up, and he's surrounded by vine soldiers. And they're like, "Shall we execute the slaves, Commander Trill?" And Arik goes, "You beasts will find me much harder to defeat without your war machines." And Trill is like, "Ah, you are an obstinate one. Let's see if you are loyal as well."
And, now, are we supposed to? We're not okay. Yeah, he doesn't understand them here. He's just because we're still seeing they're still chirping, but he's just talking English, and the reader is reading all English because they're translating the alien. But to Arik, at least at this point, he's hearing chirp chirp.
Could you imagine how not intimidating that is? It's kind of funny in a way. Because
maybe that's why he's not scared. He's like, "I'm sorry, I can't take you seriously. You're just walking around chirping here. Come on,
giant roach monster."
Like, am I really supposed to be afraid
chirp,
of you guys?
Chirp.
I'll be afraid of the giant flame throwing robot, sure, but you got no. Come on.
So basically, unless Arik chills the fuck out, Trill is gonna kill Gofty, and he's pointing a gun at him. And Arik is like, "The day will come," and he's basically allowing himself to be taken. So as he's taken off, you go back to the altar church thing that the other Vine were at, and what we see is that something's going on with Commander Pith. He's like, "I feel it. Shanhara speaks to me. The power, it is magnificent." He starts choking, and then he starts screaming, and he goes from this moment where this is going to be pretty badass to, oh, shit. He starts bleeding out of his nose, and I mean, it's really hard to see emotion
with that
in
green, nasty blood, and you can see his face just being smushed because before his eyes were lined up, like, you know, they got like three rows of eyes, and they're all lined up, but now you can see the eyes are being like spread apart, so he's just completely just imploding from inside.
Yeah, it basically choked him and squished him to death. So much so that the armor's peeling off him. It's turning back into a ball and it's getting sent back to the altar. You see him in a pot, in like a puddle of green blood. And Shanhara goes back to being in its dormant state. And at this point, one
reminds
of the
me of Metroid. You ever played Metroid?
Are you talking like the look of the armor or how the armor works?
In Metroid, they used to like shoot these little. There was one thing where there's something with a little ball and it looks like that. I'll have to look it up to really communicate what I'm saying here.
It's been a couple decades.
I mean, I haven't played it in a couple decades, so.
Yeah.
But I'm reminded of Metroid. That's all I know.
I'll say the only thing that does kind of remind me is how the armor looks. It's very Metroid-ish. But actually, I think this came out before Metroid, you know, back in the 90s. Metroid won't come out until like the late 90s, right?
No, Metroid, the first Metroid had to be in the early 90s, or no, in the 80s. I played it as a kid. On the original Nintendo, I played Metroid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, aging myself even more here, but yeah. But, yeah.
Alrighty,
Metroid's
been
around the block.
And speaking of been around the block, what we can tell is that these priests have obviously been around the block themselves when dealing with giving offerings to Shanhara. One of the priests are like, "We're scorned again! Even our strongest perish." And then the lead priest comes in and he's like, "The sacred armor of Shanhara has deemed Commander Pith unworthy. It will only bestow its gifts upon a more worthy one. Until then, we must have faith. The high priest deems it so. The day will come when it will all be revealed. The day will come." And Arik is back behind bars. And at this point, he's with all the other Visigoth. It's like a big open cell. And
everyone's kind of pissed in Planet of the Apes here, only they're not apes, they're giant cockroach creatures.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's just pissed at him. At this point, you know, all their motivation, they're all scared. And, you know, at this point,
understandably,
not even the great,
I think they've had a rough day.
Yeah, not even the great Arik of Dacia is going to be able to encourage them because obviously he's been tricked as much as they have.
This is like the same day, basically, as the battle with the Romans. Like, this is like, can you imagine this day? You got to be thinking, really? This day? I do this whole Roman battle. Most of my friends die there. And now these giant cockroach creatures have brought us into this place with this crazy armor that explodes their own soldier. Like, what is going on? What a day. What a day.
Yeah. So that's the end of issue one. What are your impressions thus far?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot to take in. But I like that we're kind of, unlike a lot of alien stories where aliens come and invade modern civilization, but modern civilization is sort of dreamed of aliens, thought of aliens. I don't know. I like there's something to the idea that I really find cool of aliens invading, centuries and centuries ago when we didn't even have planes. We didn't even have flying ships or any of that stuff. And it's so much more alien to them than aliens even would be to us. Like, you and I have seen UFO videos. Like, we kind of think there's aliens out there. So to us, if we see the aliens, we'll be like, oh, we were right. Here's aliens. This is crazy. But to him, to Arik of Dacia and the Visigoths, I mean, they probably have never conceived of creatures from other planets or spaceships or floating armor that kill, like, I mean, none of this stuff. So it's just wild. And I think living this story through them and through people from that time is what really makes this more rewarding, kind of the setting of it, more so than necessarily the aliens themselves. Although I think, as I've shown, there are layers to this between the armor, the little thing with the needle and the baby. Like, there's definitely elements of mystery to these aliens that intrigue us beyond the fact they're just kind of like scary looking roach creatures. There's obviously more to it, and there's been a lot of mystery and a lot of depth built up and a lot to throw at us here in just one issue. So I love the first issue. It really sucks you in.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much like a Edgar Rice Burroughs novel. Like, if you love John Carter and all that stuff, even a little bit of Tarzan, like, you're gonna freaking fall in love with this. And if you're a fan of Ancient Aliens, this is basically Ancient Aliens on cocaine.
Indeed, this is Ancient Aliens with a little bit of DMT.
Okay, so now we're on to issue two. We've got a flashback. Arik is getting a little hot and heavy with his wife, Deidre. This is obviously before she was kidnapped.
Quite
before.
A stutter, I gotta say.
She is.
I can see why he's so lovelorn. Why that's what he's thinking about when he's getting fighting this giant flame throwing robot.
I would go just fight aliens outside of my league too.
Yeah, I get it. I get everything about him now.
Yeah, so it all makes sense. That turns out just to be a dream. He's not there with his wife. Instead, he's sleeping on the floor. They've been in their cell for 2 days. They don't even have water, food. Gafti is there, and he's like, did they just capture us only to starve us, Arik? And Arik is like, these creatures want us weak, Gafti, docile. And at this point, a soldier comes over and he's pulling them out. What's funny is we like you mentioned, we could see what the aliens are saying. He's like, get into line now. But all the Visigoths here, all the humans here, is this chirping sound so much so that Gafti's like, do you think we understand their gibberish? Like, it is kind of, as serious as this is, like the funny parts don't come like that explicitly. It's the undertones. It's hilarious.
I love that this is addressed, because one thing that always I hate. It's just, you really should be able to suspend all your disbelief, I suppose, in comics and that sort of thing. But there are certain things that I can never let go, because I can suspend my disbelief, but there's certain logical gaps I can never make. And I hate when alien creatures are encountered and they're just speaking English, or you go to another planet and people are speaking English. It drives me crazy. And I like that it is really addressed here, that they, we know they can't communicate with each other. We know they're hearing the chirps. Their authors are doing us a favor by letting us know what the aliens say, so we know, see the whole picture. But I just like that this language barrier here is addressed. Whereas a lot of alien stories like this would just brush it over, and inexplicably everyone would be speaking English, or they would just have some magical the alien would just be like, oh, I have this little thing that, translates. So I love this part of it too.
Same. I mean, it doesn't always make things easier for the storyteller, but for the reader, it's way more rewarding.
Yeah.
At this point, the Visigoths are taken out to this giant atrium inside the colonial mothership. They're basically being told, hey, go harvest, go till the field. It's like, this must be where all their food comes from.
And are they teaching them to garden? Because, like, if they can't speak the language, they're just assuming these guys know how to garden all these different alien plants. I mean, this is I feel like they need a class first, or, some kind of training course. Like, these are warriors, not gardeners.
They're already telling us that they all understand this language. I think gardening must be universal to some degree.
I guess so, yeah.
But it's hilarious.
I mean, they do seem to take to it pretty quickly. So
yeah, I mean, they get to it. There's no fighting them. They've been starved. They're just tired. They're like, fine, space roach person, I'll go do what you want. Chirp, chirp. And they're basically slaves, and they're being worked to death. So much so that eight of them must have died the last couple of nights, and their bodies were used for compost.
I must have kind of brushed by this the first time. They are actually, maybe you're going to get to this.
It's like me and Arik's father.
You do see, you do see. There is another guy there that's clearly not part of his crew. That's like, looks like he's from some kind of African tribe there. So they do, I guess, to show you that they've been taking humans from different parts of the earth. I think the first time I'd read this, I kind of just had everybody as one of Arik's crew. But they're going out of their way actually to show you, to give you little hints that there's more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like I'm big into show, don't tell, even mm-hmm. though storytelling is a big part of comic books. Comic books are primarily a visual medium. So when you see that, it begins to show you the depth. And I think it means more when you realize that versus when they just explicitly tell you. Yes, you know, at this point, it's kind of funny because there are these lines of pipes up high above them, and they're basically sprinklers. They're sprinklers. So they start sprinkling water. We see it as sprinklers. They're looking at this and they're like, rain without sky.
They're like, what is
powers through these creatures wield?
If you thought that spinning armor that suckificates people was something, wait till you see how they make water come from the sky.
Yeah. And at this point, you know, one of the warriors, they're like, if they mean to make farmers of us, at least we will eat. He grabs this little giant grapefruit thing. He takes a bite of it, and immediately he gets tased by one of the vine troopers. And he's like, filthy animal, you dare desecrate the offspring? And it's like, offspring, what's going on here? So we're already like,
Is it me? Maybe I'm just hungry, but this fruit looks delicious. Like, maybe I'm just hungry. I don't know.
It looks like a Cadbury egg.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Like, I don't know what's in there, but boy, it's like purple. And I mean, it looks like it's got to be so sweet. And there's that white Cadbury stuff in there. I mean, I want one of these things. But maybe I'm just hungry. Yeah, I haven't eaten yet.
I mean, they call it the offspring. I don't know if they mean offspring the way we mean offspring, but he gets tased. And as soon as that happens, Arik jumps over because he's a boss. And he's like, try facing your opponent, beast. So
he's trying to teach him principles of battle along the way, too. You know, he's gonna give him some lessons while we're at this.
This is this is funny. As soon as you think Arik's about to have this fight with this guard, just a bunch of other vine troopers go over and they just start beating him Rodney King style.
Yeah, with these tasers. Like, zzz, zzz, zzz. Yeah, that doesn't look fun.
Yeah, so much so that one of them comes over with like these giant spears, and he's just like, we are vine, you do not disobey us, you will be an example. So as Arik is like, wait, like, I don't know what he's gonna do, but he's putting his arm out because obviously he wants to stop having the crap beaten out of him. They cut off his hand, and it's just, it's all, they show everything, and then they show him,
which is so unexpected,
and he's just screaming like, yeah, it's like, this is our main character.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't cut off his hand.
Yep. Yeah, I remember the first time reading this, like, whoa, hold on. Our main character's losing his hand? Is he always not going to have a hand? Okay, I guess so.
Yeah, and I mean, it just gets worse for him, because what do? They just return him back to the pen, they drop him there, and it's an ugly, bloody stump. So much so, he tries to wrap it up till he stop it from getting infected, but they cut off his hand. They didn't treat him, so what does he do? He blacks out. Just right there. What are your thoughts of where we're at right now?
Dude, I mean, Arik knows no bounds in terms of his bravery, how much he's willing to stand up to these fuckers. But man, that it just, they really punch the reader in the face when they chop his hand off. I mean, it really shocks your system. And then how he just tries to tie it all up. I mean, I like that you don't just see the hand and move on. We see the aftermath. We see that he has to tie himself up, and we see him slowly pass out, because that's what would happen if you lost your hand. I'd probably pass out the instant I lost my hand, because I'm not badass like Arik, but you know, anybody else would just pass out once they had lost a little bit more blood there. But ooh, it's nasty.
Yeah, and you think that's a surprise. What happens on the next page? I imagine this in like the SpongeBob narrator voice. Years later. Years later have gone by, and Arik still doesn't have a hand.
Yeah.
And Gofty has to wake him up. He's like, they're coming. It's time for another shift. And they're just
another day at work.
Yeah, and they're just put back to work. And, you know, there's just there's no hope. All hope has been taken from them. And, you know, at this point,
Arik's grown a nice little beard here now, as any downtrodden brave warrior should after a few years.
So at this point, he's just basically given up. He is coming up with a plan, though. He's like, we can't face them face to face. They're not brutes, relentless like us. What we need to do is we need to come up with an escape plan at night.
Great movie, by the way.
They've gone years just trying to basically fight them man to man, but obviously it took a lot of bad efforts and dead bodies and hands getting cut off for them to figure out, what if we come up with like a stealthy escape plan for once?
This is what I was referencing earlier when I said Arik is the kind to just go into battle, not come up with a plan. But here we see, you know, as brave as he was confronting these guys, his attempts to just go into battle over and over here were clearly not working, to the point that he got his hand chopped off. So he did actually take another approach and apparently have had a few years of careful planning here.
Yeah, and basically what you see them do is that they've been taking some of their work supplies and they've been fastening it into weapons. So you see them with wires and sticks and some sharp objects, maybe a grenade or something. And what they're basically trying to do is they've been able to, through being dragged around the ship, they made a map. And what they're basically going to do is they're going to try and get to the armory. And from there, they're going to try and fight and escape. So at this point, they're actually getting kind of smart.
I still don't get what their plan is. Are they going to man a spaceship and that they've never have ever touched anything and learn to fly it? I don't know. But
yeah, at this point, they're like, we'll make it up as we go. Yeah. And that's what kind of happens. The guards come in late at night and he's like, you wake up. And what you see is that you see one of the guys, he's on the floor face down. It looks like he's dead. So they're like, oh, this one has expired. Have a pair of animals bring it to the compost. And as soon as he comes over, Arik jumps right behind him and stabs him in the back. Then what they do is they launch an arrow through the other vine soldier's mouth. And this is funny. I guess that was the vine creature that cut off Arik's hand. So as everyone's like getting out, they're like, Arik, what's up? And Arik grabs a spear and he's like, a hand for a hand, and he cuts off the dead vine soldier's hand. I mean, he's a freaking riot.
This is great because not only does he get revenge, but then he uses that hand to act, because earlier they had shown an alien, one of those vine, using his hand to open the cell. So now Arik takes that hand and he's using that hand to open up all the cells of everybody else.
Yeah, and this is what's funny, is as they start doing that, they're freeing more and more soldiers, and this is where just the straight-up prison fight starts. They're going around fighting vine soldiers and arcs, like, cut them down. And this is what I love about this book, so much decapitating.
There is
so
a lot of limbs and heads that are coming off here.
Yeah, it's very Games of Thrones-ish. Mm-hmm. But at this point, they're running to the armory. They're like, not much farther. And then they get to probably a platoon of vine soldiers of guns, and the vines are like, chirp, chirp, put down your weapons. At this point, the humans are looking at Arik. They're like, what do we do? And Arik's like, the armory is just beyond. We go through them. So they just fucking charge.
And yeah, what else are we going to do?
One guy's on fire. He's just on fire right there, and there are more heads being cut off and people being just shredded, but somehow this committed ideological force of humans have been able to take on a superior army.
I love it. I love it so much. We're only in the second issue, by the way, and this feels, again, so many moments in these first couple issues feel like how a movie ends, the big battle scene, the big escape scene. So we're getting so much action, but it's all within this very unique story.
Yeah, and at this point, they open the doors and they're like, hey, if this is an armory, it is decidedly lacking in armor. Is there just the one? And what they've gone into is basically that temple, that church. So Arik goes over and he's like, one will have to be enough. He looks at it and he's just, oh my God, as Shanhara raises, it goes over to him. And at this point we go to the outside of the armory and they're looking around. They're like, vine soldiers, why have you not entered the temple? Only a handful are left, destroy them. And they're like, hey man, like, obviously not, hey man, you guys get that we riff on this. Hey man, the sacred armor of Shanhara is inside. What if we harm it? And the guy's like, simpleton, the armor is worthless. It is a story told by priests to keep hold of their followers. Shanhara is a death sentence to any fool who wears it. So obviously there's a priest inside as we go back into the temple. He's screaming, sacrilege, while Gofti's just holding a knife to him. Like, shut up. I don't know why he doesn't just kill him there. But Shanhara goes on Arik. You think, as it's on him, that it's killing him, and he falls down, and Gofti's like, Arik! And the priest says, he has paid for his transgression. Shanhara would never choose a human. At that point, the doors blow up, and the vine soldiers run in, trying to end the rebellion. At this point, just before they're about to shoot everyone, these giant laser blasts come out, taking down all the troops, and the priest turns around and he's like, no, it's not possible. And then you see Arik looking badass as hell with these laser gauntlets, wearing the Shanhara armor. And while everyone is trembling, the priest just bows and he says, Shanhara has chosen a human.
I love how there's like laser green smoke coming off his fist, as if he just fired a gun, but it's lasers and it's the color of the laser, green lasers. It's such badass. Yeah, and he looks so awesome. Still no hand, and he looks so badass. And yeah, this is a great reveal. Obviously, we know what this show, you know, we know where this is all going from the beginning. We know he's going to get this armor. It's on, you know, on the cover of the book. So we know it's going to happen, but it still feels like an epic moment.
Yeah. And that ends issue two. But issue three, we just jump right into it. You see a couple of Vine soldiers talking about their day, just having a nice old conversation. As they go over to take some of the slaves to use as literal human target practice, you see that same green blast of energy blows up both their heads. And what happens? Arik has the exo armor, and he's just blowing everyone up. At this point, the priest is still there. He's like, "It cannot be. The sacred armor of Shannara has killed all who have worn it." Yet a slave from the pen survives. How? And at this point, I just want to point out, as the armor's gone around him, Arik still doesn't have his hand.
Yep.
So you just see the stump, and he's still fighting people. At one point, he grabs a Vine soldier by his head.
And the easy comic thing to do would have just been, oh, have the armor just give him a hand, you know?
Immediate.
I like that it doesn't. Yeah.
And what it shows is that even without a hand, Arik is still a badass MF-er. So much so, he grabs the face of a Vine soldier. And I don't know what the wrestling move is, but he just like slams him headfirst into the ground, squashing his head like a grape.
I watch more pro wrestling than probably anyone I know, and I've never quite seen this move exactly done to anybody. This is like not even a choke slam. This is like a backwards face slam, if I was going to name this. And it crushes his face. So,
I mean, so much blood. That. Yeah. So much blood. But, you know, at this point, some soldiers run in, actually shooting Arik. He looks down, surprised that he's not dead. He's like, oh, I must be invincible. So he's still blasting people. And one of the soldiers is like, the armor, it's Shannara lives. And as he runs away, everyone stands up and Arik is like, this is good armor indeed.
I love that. It's just, this is good armor.
and this is important. Like I'm skipping a lot of the dialogue, but the stuff that comes from the priest is really important. He is basically the expositional device here. The priest goes as Arik is like pretty impressive himself, and he's like, so much time, so many soldiers sacrificed, at least the day has come. You are the one the prophecies foretold of. Shannara has chosen you.
And you can see that this priest character, actually, like all the other aliens and Vine are trying to kill, you know, kill the human still and kill Arik, but the priest is like stopped. He's just like, he respects it. He has faith in Shannara, and he respects the choice. Like, he might not like the choice, but he's like, he's shocked by it, but, you know, he believes that Shannara's choice is correct, whatever that be it may be, because he is the priest of this thing. So we don't know the backstory, but we know that he is looking at this differently than the rest of the Vine.
Yeah. But here's the crazier thing, though. At this point, you know, Gafti comes over and he smacks the priest. He's like, enough of your foul chittering. And Arik, as he's looking around at the situation, he's like, the priest said something about me being chosen. And Gafti's like, you understand the creature's clicks and chirps? And Arik replies, it is as if suddenly I remember things I have never learned, as if the armor has thoughts. Its power courses through me. And then it looks like he's about to have like another attack, like the armor might kill him. Instead, he lunges back and, you know, he sees the armor is moving. And he's like, get it off of me. I'm freaking out. What ends up happening? It grows Arik a freaking hand.
There it is. There's the hand.
Yeah, and I mean, he's looking at his hand. He's just like, what the hell? And he's like, my God, look, how many years since the creatures took my hand? This armor is capable of miracles. I understand why they revere it. So what does the team do after this? They're like, let's grab some guns and some other weapons, and let's start killing some Vine. And the next page is badass as hell. It's a giant, almost double single page spread of small panel at the bottom. Arik comes out with gauntlets blazing as the other warriors have guns and they're shooting back, and he's like, leave none alive. And they're just it's so
like
cool.
The Romans all over again, except he's got Shannara on his side this time. So
this kind of reminds me of like the Iron Man tank missile moment in the first Iron Man film.
Yeah,
it's almost, for me, this is what that reminds me of. It's so cool. And they're taking down guys. And at this point, you know, the soldiers are coming now and they're throwing out bombs. And, you know, right now, a lot of the humans are dead. They're freaking out. Arik can only do so much. He gets another like missile upgrade from the armor, and he shoots it down at a group of Vine soldiers. They just erupt in flames, blow up. Suddenly he's also discovered how to freaking fly with this thing. I mean, it's just awesome. And at this point, he gets back on the ground and he sees this one vine creature alive. And he's just like, choking, dying. Arik, his face just looks like so, it's just full on rage. He's about to, he's basically deciding, do I kill the soldier who's obviously unable to fight or not? And then, you know, right when you think, oh, he's not, because he's a hero, you see a close up of his face and he's like, there's always fight in someone. And just before he's about to blow off the head of this vine soldier, you see Commander Krill back in the giant mech suit. And he's calling out, slave! And Arik goes, you, it was you who captured me years ago. You took me from my people, from my wife. If you will not fight me man to man, then it will be armor to armor. And this is cool. Now understand, while he has these other missiles, projectiles, guns, and stuff that is still kind of foreign to him in terms of technology, what does he do? He uses this giant energy beam strand, and he makes a sword construct out of it. So as he's lunging towards Trill, he basically creates a laser sword, like a lightning laser sword. Yeah. It is freaking awesome.
And I love just in not that many pages, we learned so much about what this armor does. We learned that it can give him the knowledge to understand all of these other aliens, other species. It can create a new hand for him. It can kind of create any weapons he desires, because this idea for the sword obviously came from Arik's mind, didn't come from Shannara. It came from Arik's mind and his wanting to have that sword and kind of get revenge for the breaking of his father's sword at the hands of the same you know, Commander Trill or what have you. So I love how much we're seeing out of this armor. And we, just like Arik, we are learning this is more than just, you know, some armor you toss on for protection.
Yeah, and at this point, he's broken the windshield of the mech. He's trying to pull out the commander, and he's like, I will take your life. I will take your head. So what does the commander do? He places some explosives on Arik's chest right before he's about to get it, and he's like, curse you. Curse Shannara. Tosses him off with the mech arm, and then there's an explosion that is so gigantic. It blows a massive hole out of the colonial mothership. So much so that Arik at this point is just floating through space. And he seems to be knocked out, so much so that he's basically seeing memories of his wife. And, you know, at this point, it's like a dream.
And they even show cracks in his face, the face shield of the armor, implying like, oh, no, is he actually in danger here?
Yeah, I mean, he's seeing his wife, and then we go back to the commander, and he's calling out for Admiral Zlexum. This is Commander Trill. The animals outside the ship, fire the cannons. And this is where we get the name, the titular name of the book, Destroy the Man-O-War Armor. And at this point, this is... this can be taken multiple ways. Arik is waking up, and he's just saying, Rome... Rome, Rome. He's just going full barbarian.
He's got to get back to this, that hot redhead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. At this point, we're back on the bridge of the ship, and one of the priests jumps in. He's like, wait, stop. You must not harm Shannara.
Are these multiple priests, or is it the same priest's character? I thought it was the same guy.
I think it's the same guy.
But he might be right. I don't know.
Yeah,
they all look the same, these vines. I don't want to be racist or anything or alienist here, but you know, let's be honest.
Yeah.
At
this point, the ship is about to launch fire on Arik, but out of nowhere, he just blips. You see his little light, and he just disappears. And everyone on the bridge is like, he's gone. The armor's gone. What do we do? And at this point, we're back to Earth. We're in Rome, Italy, but it's not Rome, Italy, 402 AD. Years have passed, but obviously more than just a couple. We're in our modern times right now, and we're at a Practisa di Mari Air Force Base in Rome, Italy. We're seeing that these guys on the air traffic control tower are getting an unidentified contact coming from above, of all places. And at this point, they're kind of freaking out. They're like, this thing's coming from like Mach 10 speed. We got to sound the alarm. Then we get to the Roman Colosseum in a double page spread. We see something crash right through. And at this point, as they're looking at it, they're like, oh shit, we're under attack. And what do we see? That thing falling from the sky through the Colosseum is Arik. And he gets up just like nothing has happened. He takes his helmet off and he's just basking in the air. He's like, I have returned to you, my wife. Before this stands, we will both be free. I will unleash this armor upon the Romans and together we will. And he turns around and who does he see? He sees tourists taking photos of him. And you see his kid come over, and he's like, look, a gladiator, cool. And Ark is looking at him like, what the hell is this? But before he could really figure out what's going on, you see a bunch of soldiers surrounding him, and they're like, don't move. We have you surround him. So Ark is looking around like, okay, I'm back in Rome. This is obviously, you know, only a couple years have passed. He looks at them before putting the helmet back on, and he's like, Roman pigs, the more of you, the better.
Yeah, I love this, you know, how he just blasts right into the Roman Colosseum, like destroying it. There's a little bit of, you know, sweet revenge, I guess, on that. It is a Roman Colosseum where they would presumably have people like Arik, people like the Visigoths come and battle as slaves. And he just blasts right through that thing. And yeah, I mean, he wastes no time in immediately, even though they have guns now and everything, I don't think he quite realizes what's going on. He still just sees these people as Romans, and he does not look happy. So as we end this third issue, it's a little bit of a, oh God, what's he going to do here? What's he going to do with this crazy armor to these now modern humans who are understandably pretty shocked and pretty concerned about what has just occurred?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously through space and time, travel and everything, a few years in a certain part of the space might be decades here. In Arik's case, centuries, thousands of years have gone.
Just go watch Interstellar, guys, and then you'll understand.
There you go. And we're on to issue 4. We're back at the bridge of the Vine mothership. It's very dialogue heavy for multiple pages, but basically the priest is arguing with Commander Trill. And, you know, Trill is like, listen, obviously if Sean Hara chose a human, it's his will, and that thing is our god, so we should not try and destroy it. And Trill is like, it's just myths and legends, and if you defend the human, you must be a traitor. So they're basically arguing about what to do. And at this point, you know, Trill looks back and he's like, if they ask my opinion, I will tell them there is too much we do not yet understand. The armor was suddenly awoken, and we should know why. Instinct tells me we should reclaim the Man of War armor, not destroy it. I'm sorry, that's the Admiral. Because then Commander Trill looks at him and he's like, as you command, your faith serves us well, Admiral, the priest replies. And the Admiral goes, faith is your purview, priest. I am entrusted with the safety of our race. I do not have the luxury of faith. Make no mistake, if we cannot reclaim the armor, then we'll advise the council to destroy it. So what you basically see is that there's a lot of internal political issues amongst the priests and the military, because the priest has basically taken the side of Sean Hara. It's like, if it chose a human, it did so for a reason. Yeah. That thing is our god. Who are we to deny it? And the military is like, listen, if we can't take that thing to be our own weapon, we'll just freaking destroy it because a slave has it.
I don't know, man. I think I'm on the priest's side here. That armor seems to be pretty damn powerful, so I'm just going to go ahead and agree with the armor.
And speaking of pretty damn powerful, we're back to Rome, Italy. The soldiers are yelling, get on the ground. They're pointing guns at him. And as Arik puts the helmet on, he's like, so General Stilicho, the Roman general we dealt with in the first issue. So Roman Stilicho has dispatched legionnaires to welcome me. I hope he sent his best. I did not come this far to surrender. So what does he do? He starts just blasting away these soldiers. He thinks that he's back in Rome, so much so that as he escapes...
No, he is back in Rome, just not...
Yeah, I mean, back in Rome in 402 AD. As he basically has now mastered his ability to fly, he flies heavily above the city, and he's like, Rome, you grew during your absence. Your vile weapons have conquered more lands, but Ark of Dacia is not the same Visigoth warrior you once knew.
Yeah, he thinks this all happened in like 3 years.
Yeah, he's like, I wield far more than the blade. Your high walls cannot keep me out. Your people call this place Eternal City, not after today. And all of a sudden, we see a missile come out from what appears to be an F-16, it hits Arik, and the pilot's like, direct hit, target destroyed. But out of nowhere, through the smoke, he's like, I don't know if I can confirm this thing. Arik is flying right towards the pilot, and he screams, target still active. He basically blows up the ship by, the F-16, by going right through it. Just... no chill. He is not here to fuck around.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation because, you know, you can't really blame the government response here, I guess. I mean, this thing came out of nowhere, is killing, you know, just immediately killing people on the ground, destroying the Roman Colosseum. Now it flies into the air and is just destroying, impervious to missiles, destroys a plane. I mean, I can't really be surprised that governments of the world, as we'll see in a moment, are freaking out.
Yeah, at this point, there's another jet coming towards him. Instead of just destroying this one and killing the pilot like the last one, he lunges to the nose of it, pulls off the hatch, and the pilot's just screaming. The jet goes down, and Arik is just holding this guy by his collar. He's freaking out. And Arik is like, "Where is General Stilicho? Where is Emperor Hieronymus? I will have my wife return to me, or all of Rome will burn." Because obviously we saw how hot his wife is.
Okay, and I decided what bothers me now. What? And maybe I can just tell myself. It's always little things for me. Why is he speaking English? Is Arik speaking English this whole time? Or should I just presume that Arik is still speaking Latin or Italian or something, and
he's
so is the soldier?
He's speaking through the helmet.
Oh, he's speaking through the helmet. So that actually is explained.
Yep.
All right. I'm good. Never mind. I totally forgot about that get out of every language confusion free card that we now have with Exo, but it actually explains all of it.
Yeah, now we've got a MacGuffin. So the pilot is just like, what do you mean? Italy doesn't have an emperor. And at this point, Arik, you know, he's saying you're lying, but you look at his face and he's just the man must have some serious PTSD, so much so that the armor starts putting history of the world up from when he was taken to when he arrived back into his mind, so much so that he drops the pilot. And here we see the siege of Rome in 410 AD, the Crusades in 1176. We see a concentration camp in 1945. We're seeing the Spanish Inquisition in 1583. And he's like, how have I been gone for 16 centuries?
Gotta watch Interstellar, dude. It'll explain the whole thing.
Anyway, the pilot's falling down. He's screaming. Exo saves him, lowers him to the ground. And he's like, what has happened to the Roman Empire? Where are the Visigoth people? Speak. And the pilot's just like, Rome isn't just an empire. It's just a city. And the Visigoths, they don't exist, at least not anymore.
It's like the only Goths we have now are our teenagers that wear black and eyeshadow.
Yeah. At this point, you know, Arik is just having it. And he flies off before more jets can find him. But what we do know is that he's headed north. At this point, now we cut scenes. We're in Manhattan, and the sky, just a regular human. He picks up the phone as he's in bed, and he's like, "What?" And the whoever's on the phone, because the caller ID just says unknown, it's like, "Turn on Fox News right away, Alexander." And what you see on Fox is that they're basically saying, "Listen, there was a terrorist attack that took place in Rome. This person fired upon armed Italian soldiers and then took to the air and destroyed two Eurofighter Typhoon military jets." And, at this point, he's just freaking out. He's watching this. And then we basically hear that there are these two women in bed. They're like, "What? Are we not interesting enough for you?" And, this guy, Alexander, he doesn't even look back. He's like, "Get dressed. You're both leaving."
And this guy's got a bevy of women, presumably being paid for this, perhaps it would seem, all in different outfits, just waiting, like in the waiting room. Like they were just all next, along with, you know, what some other guy that's
waiting
out there.
I mean, he walks out into his living room. You see more prostitutes, probably, and he's just kicking them all out.
And this is one thing about Valiant Comics, by the way. You would never see this in a Marvel or DC comic. Like Valiant comics are definitely sort of for adults. I wouldn't say any of them are over the top intentionally trying to be extra adult, but they're definitely R rated. I mean, there's decapitations, hand capitations with blood. There's prostitutes, there's threesomes. There's all the things that you would never ever find in a mainstream Marvel or DC book. So, if you want to read a book that feels more like an adult movie that feels less like it's for kids, these Valiant books never feel like they're for kids.
Absolutely. Alexander goes into a room, he closes his eyes, and he goes into a trance. And long story short, you see a bunch of other people pop up, and you see the dialogue bubbles change to that vine chirping language that we can see through the brackets. And it's like, "Hello, Alexander, we've been waiting for you." And long story short, all these people, including Alexander, they are vine seedlings. They were basically in the very first issue where we saw them change that baby. These are basically other people who were basically put on Earth. They are vine, but they look like humans, and they're basically a shadow cell. you know, they're like Manchurian candidates. Say a word, they activate, except these guys know exactly who they are. So they're like Skrulls, except for all intents and purposes, they are humans. And they've all been brought together by the Admiral because they're all being told that, you know, a human has escaped with the Shannara armor. And, you know, basically they want Alexander, who works within, you know, one of the governments of the world, to help get it back at this point. And the Admiral who shows up in the trance, he's like, the Council has commanded that you use your influence on Earth to reclaim the armor ahead of my arrival. One of you must lead the effort. Who will volunteer? And no one wants to go up against this thing. So Alexander's like, fine, I'll go. And, you know, the trance ends, and basically, you know, the story ends of Alexander picking up a phone, and he's like, prepare my jet. I have business to attend to. And that is the end of issue 4. What happened to Rome? What are the Vine planning? And in the very last panel, we see the preview for the next issue, which is in the next volume. Enter Ninjak. Who the hell is Ninjak? So, you know, this is just picking up for greater and greater things. And, you know, as soon as I finished reading this volume, I immediately went back to my comic book store and I bought five. And then when they, you know, five extra. And then when I found out there were extra spinoffs and everything else, I went on Amazon and I was just buying like crazy. So that's it. That is Exo Manowar Volume 1 by the Sword. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's a hell of an introduction to this character. Like I said, right from the beginning, you're thrown into action. Really, every issue you're thrown into action. But it's not just action for action's sake. There's a compelling character. I mean, it's hard not to be drawn to the character of Arik right from the beginning. And a really compelling story where it's, you know, if you just wrote the description of this to me, I might be mildly intrigued. But I don't know. It's a guy with armor. And there's aliens, okay, whatever. But the way they actually lay this whole thing out for you, and they, like you said, there's a lot of show, not tell. So you see a lot of things, but you're not getting the full picture. So as we see the story of Arik, you know, being kidnapped by aliens and leading this whole rebellion, which is a really interesting story in and of itself. There's also this background story of what's going on with the Vine, of what their greater plan is. Like, they're not just picking up humans to go work in a garden. Like, there's so much more going on here. They have all these sort of half Vine human hybrids around the globe, and you don't even know, like, you know, we saw that one baby that was replaced right in the first issue. Like, part of me is like, oh, is Alexander that baby? Just, are they this old? Do they live that long? Or is this generations of these things that have been all around the world? We really don't know. And part of not knowing the full story is part of the intrigue of this as well. Compelling character, compelling story. Am I grading this right now?
Let me go first for this one, because I think Valiant, especially, you know, I did the state of the poll list over on Patreon. I did a Remso rant discussing what I was... I messed up my own name. I did a Remso rant discussing the comics.
Remso, that's your
Southern cousin.
That's your
Southern pro wrestling cousin, name. But anyway...
It's either your pro wrestling name or porn name. I'm not sure which one.
I'll trademark it tonight. I'll maybe be coined later. Anyway, I did a state of the poll list and a Remso rant over on Patreon telling you what comics I'm going to be subscribing to from my local comic shop in 2021. And Valiant is number one. And DC is number two, and there's no Marvel or Dark Horse or Image. So it's just Valiant and Marvel it's Valiant and DC who seem to be taking my money. And I mean, I remember I got this on my way to work, and I read this during my lunch break. And then, you know, because I was working nights, I was like the only one in the office, didn't have much work. I finished it off. Then next day I bought everything else. I freaking love this volume. I'm giving the story a 5, and I'm giving the artwork a 4. So it's going to get a total Remso score of 9 out of 10. I just think it's that good.
That's pretty damn good. We're not too far off. I also gave the art a 4. I think the art is very good. Not the best artwork I've ever seen. It would probably be even better if it was someone like, you know, Joe Quesada. I'd love a throwback Joe Quesada. I don't think he's still doing art at all anymore.
It's a little bit choppy, but the way that they're able to lay everything out and have its own unique look to the details and way the characters and all the different aliens look and everything, it's good enough to be good, but it's not great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's good. It's very good, not great. So that's why it gets a 4. And then I'm not going quite as high as you on the story, but pretty damn close. I'm going to 4.5 on the story and the writing. I mean, I liked it a lot. To me, I reserve a 5 for, like, you know, the most epic stories that I've ever read. I love this. I like it. I highly recommend it. I can't quite go to a 5, but a 4.5 on the writing is nothing to be ashamed of. So 8.5 and a 9 from you, and 8.5 from me. That's a total second print score of 17.5. absolutely in the recommended reading range for sure on this one. I think we all agree on that.
Absolutely. And I mean, really, everything from Valiant that's gone on the past 9 years, it springboards from this volume of Exo Manowar. So if you want a starting place for an entire universe at your hands, this is it.
Yep. And like I said, I mean, I love when I can dive into something and not feel intimidated by everything around it. You can definitely do that, especially because this Exo Manowar edition, and we got to go further on this one. Like, I might do, it's a candidate for Claire's Continues. Maybe once I get through Savage Dragon, maybe we'll come back to it on the show. There's so many directions we can go from here, though, too. We could tackle Ninjak. We can tackle Bloodshot. These reboots were all really, really well done. So there's a lot of directions we can go with Valiant, but I'm certain we'll be returning to either more Exo, more Valiant. You know, we got, I think you and I are going to be on this earth for a while. So there's no limit to where we can go with this thing.
Absolutely.
So if you will hear the name Valiant again, my friends.
Absolutely. And if you wanted it now, you're going to get it a lot down the road, because they've not only been able to stay consistently this high of quality over years, even though there have been some, you know, iffy editorial decisions. I'm not a big Heather Antos fan and folks like that. She's the editor-in-chief at Valley Entertainment. Ultimately, I mean, you've got Dennis Hopeless Hallam writing the current Exo series. You've got Bloodshot, which has been great. They're bringing back Shadow Man in March. This is really where they reward people who just love good comics. And I'm so excited that we were able to eventually start off this Valiant journey here with Exo Manowar.
Yeah, and for anyone that does want to dive into the Valiant universe, like from, I mean, you could do a couple of different things. There's also the 90s version of this universe, which might be fun to dive into. I plan to go back to some of that stuff soon as well, because I was collecting that stuff as a kid. But for like a fresh start, that I think that the 2012 relaunch is still connected to the modern continuity, even though there was an ownership change there. So, I mean, I would start with either Exo. Exo is a great place to start. Two other options that I think are both excellent are Jeff Lemire's Bloodshot and Matt Kent's Ninjak. Those are both excellent starting points. So start wherever you want. The characters do all come together, and you know, I really think that people that are just getting into comics that have, or people that have even been into comics for a long time, but have never gotten into the Valiant universe for whatever reason, maybe just pass them aside. I really can't recommend diving into this universe, at least a little bit, at least dipping your toe in the water. And Exo Manowar is certainly an excellent place to start.
Yeah. I mean, Exo Manowar alone. And I mean, I love Bloodshot too. I've got the Volume 1 Deluxe Edition. It's awesome. Ninjak and all the others. I mean, we haven't even gotten into Harbinger, Unity, Shadow Man, Eternal Warrior. This is cinema on page. I mean, it really is.
Which is why it's sad to hear that the movies aren't quite, you know, panning out as originally planned, but maybe we'll get something. I mean, I would love to see an Exo movie, a well-done Exo movie for sure.
It's
the most cinematic, I think, of all these, naturally cinematic of all these stories.
It's got everything people want. It's got romance. It's got, you know, giant old school historic war scenes. It's got aliens. It's got the thrill of an Iron Man movie mixed with Thor. It's everything you want.
Indeed.
Perfect. Well, folks, that's all I've got. Mark, anything else?
That's about it. Just the only one thing we talked a lot. We did a lot of promotion in the beginning, so I won't bore you with all of that stuff again. But the one thing I didn't mention earlier, which we always try to mention as much as possible, if you're just a fan of this show, you want an easy way, easy free way to help us out, head over to Apple Podcasts. Of course, we're happy to get a review anywhere, but the place that helps us the most are reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you can go and give us a 5-star rating and a great review, I mean, that is huge for us. It helps us with all the algorithms. When people search for comic book podcasts, they're more likely to find ours. The more ratings, the more 5-star ratings, the more great reviews we have. And a lot of you have done that. So thanks to everyone who has been reviewing the show out there. But if you're listening and you haven't done it yet, take a second. Think. What could I do to give back? What can I do to give back to Mark and Remzo, who spend hours and hours and hours prepping and recording and editing these shows? What can I do? I can take 5 minutes of my day and give them a great review on Apple. I can do that. So you can do that. So I would really appreciate anybody who leaves us a great review. But other than that, that's all I got, Remzo.
Well, anyway, folks, I'm Remzo W. Martinez.
I'm the mischievous Mark Clare.
Read comics. Change the world. Good night, America.
Adios.